to Dad.
Hello and welcome to the Talk Dad podcast, episode 169. Got Will here with me.
Hello.
How's it going, Will?
Pretty good.
It is the end of September. We are coming up on October. It'll be October before you know it. You know that?
It's true.
It'll be October on, what is it, Monday? When is it, the first day of October? I'm going to check my calendar here.
Apparently fall started.
I'm sure someone is listening to this podcast thinking, I need to know when October starts. And if this podcast doesn't tell me, there's no other way I'll find out.
Apparently fall started like earlier this week, which I think is ridiculous because fall starts in like mid-October here.
Yeah. First day of October is on Tuesday. This podcast comes out on Saturday. So I feel like we need to get mentally ready for October. Yeah. I've noticed that, like, you know, they talk about holiday creep, and I'm not talking about creepy people that hang out at the holidays. Do you know what holiday creep is?
No.
Holiday creep is like when you go into Target
on the first day of September
and they've got all the Halloween decorations out.
Yeah, I did notice Halloween decorations.
Or even like at the end of August and they already have Halloween decorations.
I noticed like a week ago and then I realized like Halloween isn't that far away.
And before you know it, like I swear when we get into October, you'll start to see Christmas stuff if it's not there already.
Yeah. October, November, and December are kind of like the glory months.
Yeah.
Because like it's Halloween and like Diwali is kind of a big holiday here. And then like November is one thing, a birthday, but also Thanksgiving. And then December, I mean, I don't think
it
I really need to explain anything there.
What they call the holiday season. Couple of notes about Halloween. So I am a big proponent of Halloween because I was born on Halloween. So I feel like it's a part of my identity.
Me too.
There is a big movement right now. I don't know if you've heard about this, but there's a big movement. It's kind of started last year. It may have even started before that, but it kind of took on steam last year, and it's going to take on steam this year again, I think.
Wait.
Of a petition to move Halloween to the last Saturday in October. How do you feel about this?
I think that's pretty stupid for a couple of reasons. But wait, does the podcast know that your birthday is on Halloween?
I think I've probably mentioned it before.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's just stupid, and like, we don't need another, like, day of the week holiday. Like, it's always weird and confusing. I think it needs to be based off of numbers.
So the argument for it is that, you know, that kids can enjoy it more fully and everyone can agree on when trick-or-treating is and it will just be a holiday for kids to celebrate Halloween.
You know what the thing is about that, though?
What's that?
First of all Halloween traditions can, should and do take place like in the evening or in the night.
Mm-hmm.
And like that makes it so like school days feel so much more special. And then like the rest of the next like few weeks of school days feel like so much easier because you always have Halloween candy and you're always talking about like the new horror movies that came out or whatever. And it's almost going to be Thanksgiving and so much stuff.
So for selfish reasons, I'm against this movement.
Exactly.
Because that would mean like my birthday would only be on Halloween like every 7 years or something.
Well, I mean, I have heard mom say that.
Or however that works.
I mean, I have heard mom say that like sometimes your birthday is kind of like overshadowed by Halloween.
But I don't care. I kind of like it being on Halloween. And I like being able to, like when people ask me when my birthday is, I can say Halloween. And if they move Halloween, then I'll just have to say October 31st. And they're going to be like, oh, so it used to be on Halloween before they moved it.
I think it's fun. I think it's both fun, but also really stressful that like the week before Halloween is mom's birthday. The day of Halloween is your birthday. And the week, like directly a week after November 7th, is my birthday.
Here's my proposal. Keep Halloween on October 31st. But if November 1st is a school day, it's an automatic holiday.
Okay. I don't know.
So
I
let's feel say like Halloween is on a Tuesday and November 1st is on a Wednesday. Then kids get Wednesday off school.
Okay, but like my argument about, oh, you mean like the day after?
Yeah, the day after Halloween. So you can stay out and you can trick-or-treat or go to a Halloween party, but you don't have to worry about getting up in the morning.
Okay. Well, if the day of Halloween is a school day, then I think you should keep that because it's like after school ends, it's like,
yeah,
because
you don't really need, it's like you don't really need the day off of school because it's all the activities are in the evening, right?
Yeah, it's like a Friday in the middle of the week, and like that would be awesome.
That'd honestly be pretty good, right? So you can have the next day, so you can stay out trick or treating. You don't have to worry about like, oh, I want to trick or treat, but I have all this homework to do.
It would be like Halloween's equivalent of Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds awesome, actually. I'd love that.
So that's my proposal. I did want to talk about one other thing before we move off the subject of Halloween. Do you have your phone?
I do.
I sent you a text with an image.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
This is an image that I found, or I saw on Twitter. It's one of these maps. You know how they'll make maps that are based on Google searches?
Yeah, those are cool.
So it says, the most popular Halloween candy in every state. Now, the methodology is not real great because all they use for the methodology is like based on Google search volume per capita.
Yeah, so, it could
so
just
the
be
most
like,
searched candy names.
It could be based off like what's most topical there, but
perhaps. But we've got a map here of the United States, and maybe I'll, if I remember, I will tweet this out or put it on Instagram. There are some controversial ones here. Some of them are really not controversial. Like a lot of states have Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, although I'm not a huge fan of them, I like them, but I'm not a huge fan of them. They're extremely popular.
What?
So that's not controversial at all.
Yes, that is very controversial.
No, the fact that there are lots of states that have Reese's
Peanut
Butter Cups is not controversial.
It's like the only
I like
Halloween.
Them okay. They're not but I can see why they would be the most popular in many states.
Like, okay.
I've got some others, though, that are controversial here. Like, what is up with South Dakota? Can you find South Dakota on the map?
I'm pretty sure South Dakota isn't real. So wait, no. It's North Dakota isn't real. South Dakota, yeah, what the heck? They like gummy worms.
Who would have gummy worms as your favorite Halloween candy? First of all, is it even a Halloween candy?
Also, I've never even seen that logo before.
Gummy worms? Like, I can't imagine anyone saying like gummy worms are their favorite candy.
Okay, if there's any
even within the world of gummy candies, gummy worms are not the best.
If there's any South Dakotans listening and they have like a really elaborate explanation,
I would like to hear it.
Maybe contact us.
Yeah. Some other ones that I think are a little controversial. What's up, Wyoming?
Wyoming. Yeah.
Do you see what Wyoming has?
Sweet tarts.
Yeah. Who in the world would like sweet tarts as their favorite candy?
No, I love sweet tarts.
As your favorite candy, though?
Maybe partly because I think
your
of that
favorite
one time
Halloween
in ninth grade.
Candy. Better than any chocolate Halloween candy. I think sweet tarts just kind of taste chalky.
No, sweet tarts are awesome.
I don't think they're that good.
These are so many hot chicks.
Sweet tarts are the candy that you will eat absolute last in the trick-or-treat bag, in my opinion.
Speaking of hot takes,
here's another one. What about Louisiana?
Louisiana, Airheads. Airheads are awesome.
Airheads are okay, but they're not anywhere near the best, is my opinion.
The thing is, this doesn't mean the best, necessarily. It just means the most searched.
How
it could
about,
be the most well-known, or like what has the most brands.
How about
like,
Illinois?
Illinois, Jolly Ranchers.
No,
I mean,
no,
maybe
no, no.
Jolly Ranchers are great, even though I'm kind of allergic to the dye in them, so sometimes eating them is like death. But
Jolly Ranchers are definitely a bottom of the bag trick-or-treat
candy.
Jolly
Ranchers are great.
You would eat those before you eat the other other like Halloween candies, including like chocolate and stuff.
Okay, again, I could be biased on this one because like when I was like 8, my Sunday school teacher would always give us Jolly Ranchers if we were good, but. So, I don't know. Maybe I just have like a good memory with that, but
I can't believe
we haven't mentioned yet the fact that Ohio and Pennsylvania's main one is Mars bars.
Yeah, that's really strange to me because, okay, first of all, Mars bars aren't really sold in the United States. So what's going on there? I mean, are they regional to Pennsylvania and Ohio? Do you know what a Mars bar even is?
No.
So Mars bars, like when I was a kid, Mars bars were a thing in the United States. They still are a thing, but they're only sold internationally. They're not really sold in this country unless you happen to be like in a fancy candy store that has like lots of international varieties. When I was a kid, a Mars bar was a lot like what you now call an almond Snickers. Have you ever had an almond Snickers?
Almond Snickers.
So it was like chocolate and caramel and nougat and almonds. But then they started making almond Snickers and Mars bars, but the Mars bars that are sold, and in fact, I had a Mars bar in where I was at the airport.
India?
In either India or
Bangladesh.
Qatar.
Oh.
Or Bangladesh. I don't think it was Bangladesh. I think it was either India or Qatar.
Qatar is a separate country?
Yeah, Qatar is like a country on the Persian Gulf.
Okay, I don't know my geography.
And I had a layover there on my trip. I didn't really stay there, but I had a layover there. But I think it was in India I bought a Mars bar. But a Mars bar is basically like a Milky Way. And a Milky Way is an inferior candy bar, in my opinion. They're okay, but they're not great.
Okay, me and... I think like a couple months ago, before it was Henry's birthday on July 20th, we were getting like the essential Mars bar for Phoebe to give to Henry. Because, I mean, no, not Mars bar, Henry bar.
Yeah.
Because like, she always gives him that and like dollar bills for the number of years that his age is. And like, I remember me and Mom actually tried a Mars bar there because they were selling there just as an experiment. They taste exactly like Snickers. There is no difference between them.
Yeah.
Or Mars either Snickers bars, or Milky Ways. They're the exact same.
Which one does?
Mars bars.
Mars bars taste like Milky Ways.
They're the exact same. There's no difference.
Yeah, they taste just like Milky Ways. So I'm not really sure what's going on there when they say that like in Pennsylvania and Ohio, Mars bars are the most popular Halloween candy. Couple other call outs here. I kind of got to give some credit to Wisconsin and Rhode Island. Wisconsin and Rhode Island have pretzel M&Ms. That's a pretty solid pick, and that's an unusual pick.
Yeah.
Pretzel M&Ms are pretty good. Have you ever had them?
I might have. I prefer the peanut butter M&Ms. That's like my favorite, but...
I do... Although I don't think it's as bad as, like, gummy worms. I do have to question... Montana, and it looks like Vermont.
Yeah.
Tootsie Pops are okay.
Wait, not Vermont.
Yeah, I think it is Vermont.
Oh, wait. Yeah, never mind. I was thinking of Maryland. Yeah, they're good, but like, I'm kind of disappointed that Blow Pops aren't on here because they're far superior. Colorado has Nerds. Which I think is hilarious because Colorado
Blow
is kind
Pops
of...
and Tootsie Pops are about at the same level.
Colorado is Nerds, and Colorado is like actually shaped like a Nerds box.
Yeah, so that is kind of funny. So Colorado looks like a Nerds box.
I don't get all the Milk Duds and all the...
That's
hot
what
tamales.
I was going to say. So all throughout the South, so it looks like Mississippi, Alabama, South Dakota, North Dakota, or Dakota, South Carolina, North Carolina have Milk Duds. And Milk Duds are okay, but again, that would not be my top pick. Milk Duds, the best thing you can do with the Milk Duds is dump it into some theater popcorn, and then they're good.
It kind of seems like, weirdly enough, like the less people live in it, like the more weird the candy searches are. Like there's like California, which has like Kit Kats and like...
Yeah.
Like all the Reese's states are
Texas
like Arizona,
M&Ms.
New Mexico. But then there's like Montana, which has Tootsie Roll Pops, Wyoming, which has Sweet Tarts, and like Rhode Island has pretzel M&Ms.
You know what I think is going on there? If you have low population, then a whole bunch of Google searches can really throw off the results, can skew the results, right? So if you only have a few people in Wyoming doing a whole bunch of searches for Sweet Tarts, that's going to change the total...
There can't be that few people. Maybe just like the ones.
Well, compared to California, Wyoming is really low population.
Yeah, but like it's still like something thousand people. Like it's nothing compared to the other ones, but like maybe just like the towns that are popular in there. Like I think like the biggest town in Wyoming is about the size of like where we live.
I can't expand this graphic, but I can't tell what Tennessee is. Can you tell?
Maybe, like, their biggest cities aren't as, like, mainstream as other cities, so, like, they have more unique, most popular candies. Again, these aren't the most popular candies, they're just the most searched.
The most searched, yeah.
If they have, like, the most, like, variants.
Can you tell what Tennessee is?
Tennessee? It's Red Hots. Red Hots?
That's pretty weird, too, right?
Red Hots are the candy that everyone talks about but no one ever sees.
Red Hots I have when I was a kid, but you never see them anymore. I would never see Red Hots as a Halloween candy. I can't imagine someone giving them out on Halloween.
They're like those, me and my friend Justin, in middle school, little round talking ones, about,
right?
Yeah, me and my friend Justin are talking about this one candy that, like, he was showing me, and he was talking about that, like, strawberry candy that we're, like, it's wrapped in, like, a strawberry wrapping, and he says that like...
Strawberry bonbons.
He says they always just mysteriously appear at the end of, like, grandma's, like, bowls, but no one knows where they came from.
It's true, yeah. I kind of like those.
They're really good, but, like, where do they come from?
They have this stuff in the middle of them. You can buy those in the store. I don't... Red Hots, yeah, that's an odd one.
I have never seen those in the store.
That is really odd. I think Kentucky deserves a little bit of credit for having Swedish Fish.
Yeah, Swedish Fish.
I like Swedish Fish. I think that's a legit Halloween candy. It might not be my top pick, but it's pretty good.
I'm surprised there
none of them have Twix. There's not a single Twix on here.
Yeah, that's a little surprising. I'm not giving them credit because this is their opinion, because it's not technically their opinion, but because it's giving them more search results, which means more money to the better candies.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of glad that Colorado's is nerds, because I think nerds are a bit underrated.
Yeah. So we might have to talk about Halloween candy some more before Halloween gets here.
Yes.
Because it's a really important topic.
Utah's peanut butter M&Ms.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like...
Peanut butter M&Ms, that's a solid pick too.
Maybe it's like the Utah blood that's still in me from you and mom and dad growing up in Utah that like makes you like peanut butter M&Ms. I don't know, but...
Peanut butter M&Ms are really good.
They're so good.
There's nothing wrong with them. I kind of like that there's a lot of chocolate in a peanut butter M&M.
I remember, you know, like,
it has peanut butter, but it also has a solid amount of chocolate.
When you watch like a series nine opener to Doctor Who, which by the way is like an amazing episode, but you should watch the early episodes before because setup and stuff. I remember having like crunchy M&Ms and peanut butter M&Ms, and they were like the best things I'd ever had.
Pretzel M&Ms, worth eating too.
Yeah, I gotta have those.
But you know, Texas has plain M&Ms. I think plain M&Ms overrated.
I think they're underrated, honestly.
Plain M&M's not that good. I could live without plain M&M's.
If you really, like, savor them and not just, like, chow down on them, they can be really good.
I'm not a huge plain M&M fan, but peanut butter M&M and pretzel M&M's, those are solid choices.
Yeah.
Kit Kats are pretty good, too. California has Kit Kat, and I think Kit Kats are pretty good.
Pretty much almost all the variants of M&M's and Kit Kats, really, are really good. Except for the weird spicy ones. Those are just weird.
Somewhere, I can't tell, I guess it's Delaware, has just Hershey's. Just Hershey's chocolate.
Well, I can see that because, like, even though Hershey's...
The little tiny Hershey bars.
Well, like, Hershey's is far from the best, although they are a little bit underrated, I'll admit that. But I can see how they could be the most searched.
Yeah, I could see that too, I suppose.
Actually, that makes me kind of surprised that there isn't more Hershey's.
So, switching topics here for a little bit. It's been a long week. I'm still kind of tired from my trip.
It has been such a long week.
It has been a long... I think everyone I've talked to has been like, it has been such a long week. And I just feel like this weekend, all I want to do is relax. I want to sleep in. I want to relax. But one thing I might do this weekend, my big plans this weekend, I'm thinking about playing Untitled Goose Game.
Mm.
Have you heard about Untitled Goose Game?
Yeah.
So it's been really going around, like everyone on... Not everyone, but a lot of people on Twitter seem to be talking about it. It's a video game that apparently is available on Switch and Steam, where it's just kind of this peaceful little village and you are an obnoxious goose that goes around and honks at people.
So it's like Goat Simulator.
Except I think there's like a puzzle aspect to it too. Like you have to solve puzzles.
That actually sounds like exactly the type of game.
People.
Games where you just like do whatever you want, but it's also puzzles that you have to do.
Yeah, like it's like a sandbox game, but there are puzzles involved.
That sounds actually awesome. I actually really want to play that.
I was thinking we could download that on Switch and we could take turns playing it.
Yeah, we're actually starting an official Talk to Dad gaming channel. Link is in the description.
I also just like that the creators named it Untitled Goose Game, just because I just think that's funny. I don't know why. That strikes me as really funny.
The thing with Goat Simulator is, like...
They couldn't come up with a name for it, so they just called it Untitled Goose Game.
The thing with Goat Simulator is, like, it started out as kind of a parody of simulator games, because it was, like, super glitchy and crappy on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But then they kept on updating it and capitalizing off of it until it just became a generic simulator game.
Yeah. So, switching gears again, there was something you wanted to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
You discovered the most amazing pop song ever written in the 1960s.
Yes. Can I explain how I discovered it, though?
Yes.
Okay. This is a pretty funny story. 2 days ago, when this... Actually, yesterday, I have computer science at the end of class. I've talked before about how my computer science teacher is like super awesome and really qualified and also kind of a huge nerd. We had a test that I was absent for before because I was doing choir all region. And he said, like, hey, can you step outside a bit since we're reviewing the test? And I was like, oh, sure. And so I just kind of went on my phone and, like, plugged in my headphones. And, like, I was out there for, like, almost an hour straight. And then, like, some person, like, walked out, I guess, to use the bathroom or whatever. And they're like, wait, are you still here? And I was like, yeah, is it already over? And he was like, oh, shoot. He must have forgotten. When I came back in, he was, like, super duper apologetic. And I even said, like, oh, no, it's fine. He said,
they just
like,
forgot you out in the hall.
Yeah. And I said,
for an
like,
hour.
I said, like, oh, no, it's fine. He's like, well, it's not fine, but thanks for being apologetic. And later, like, a lot of times we'll walk around and, like, check on everyone and ask if, like, they're doing okay and if they need help with any coding. And, like, towards the end, he said, like, are you doing okay? Sorry, I think I forgot to check on you. And then I said, like, hey, you forgot to check on me, too.
It was
funny.
Yeah, that's funny. So your teacher forgot about you for an hour.
So while I was out there, I kind of fell down a rabbit hole of, like, some video got suggested to me about the Beatles, and it was about, like, listen to this weird fact about the White Album, which is known as, like, the greatest album of all time.
So you know what the White Album is, right?
Yeah. Actually, so I think it was...
I don't think it's... Let me insert my own opinions here. I don't think the White Album is considered the greatest album of all time. It is the most... their most experimental album.
Well, like...
So the Beatles... I'm going to give you sort of an overview of the Beatles here. Because I think everyone who knows about pop music or rock music, you sort of have to know about the Beatles, even though the Beatles broke up like...
It's just common knowledge.
The same year I was born. They're so important to like Western rock music that you have to know everything about them. So when they started out, they were playing just straight pop music, like I Want to Hold Your Hand and, you know,
Help,
She Loves You and all that. Just very kind of almost like teeny bopper pop music. And then the longer they went, they kind of got really good at writing songs, and they crafted these really good, these really well-made pop songs. Like if you listen to like Rubber Soul, there's like these really well-made and produced pop songs. And then they kind of got into some experimental stuff. So if you get into like Revolver album or Sgt. Pepper's, there's a lot of pop songs still, but there's some really experimental stuff.
Yeah.
So the White Album, which is what it's known as, because it just has a white cover and it says The Beatles. So it's really, the name of the album is actually The Beatles.
Okay.
But it's got a white cover, so it's called The White Album, is their most experimental. There are still some pop songs, and there are some really good pop songs on it. But there are also some very experimental songs. And the most experimental song on the whole album is Revolution Number 9.
Okay. I think it's called like Revolution 9, but I think the reason why I call it
Revolution Number 9.
So Wikipedia, no, it's just Revolution 9.
No, it is 9. Revolution 9, yeah. You're right. But people know it as Revolution 9.
So Wikipedia
9.
Says that it's cited as, like, one of the best albums of all time. I call it the best because, like, Metacritic, which is, like, the harshest critic rating score ever, mm-hmm. or score system ever, like, they gave, like, Infinity War, like, a 60-something, and Black Panther, like, in the low 80s, stuff like that. Like, they gave the White Album a 100 average on Metacritic.
It's because no critic is going to say that it's a bad album.
Well, like, I checked the reviews, and all of them were, like, I think they scaled from 90 to 100.
Yeah, because it's just widely accepted that the Beatles were sort of at their creative peak when this album came out. A couple of interesting things, like, at this point, I think it was recorded, like, 1969 and released in 1970, right about there. It was one of the last albums. I think it was recorded, I want to say it was either right before or right after Abbey Road. And the last album is Let It Be. But when this album was recorded, like the band members were kind of sick of each other. And there was a lot of fighting. Like they couldn't keep them all in the same studio together. And they didn't really like each other, like when they recorded the album. So there's a lot of songs like, you know, the main songwriters were Paul McCartney and John Lennon. But then George Harrison wrote some songs too. But like, and early on, they would do a lot of collaborating. In this, it was like one person would write a song, the band would get together to record it, but it wasn't like, there wasn't a lot of collaboration because they just didn't get along very well. It was right at the end, right before they broke up.
I kind of feel like this song, for some reason, reminds me if like Vampire Weekend got like one more touch too edgy or too artsy and just went completely off the rails.
Yeah. So let me play first. So, you know, there is a Revolution 1. Did you know this?
I did not.
There is a Revolution 1 and a Revolution 9, both on the White Album. Here's what Revolution 1 sounds like. You probably heard it before. I'm going to play it real quick. All right, so this is Revolution 1.
I think I've heard this before.
You've probably heard it.
Oh, yeah. We actually studied this in Humanities. That's weird. We actually...
So this is the White Album version. There's another version that's a little more rocking.
We actually...
But this is Revolution 1.
I think we studied this one in Humanities because we were studying like how art, like, or how like musical art evolved over time. And like we were like studying like the guitar riffs and stuff.
Let me see if I can find the other version that's probably more common actually. Oh, here we go. And it kind of sounds like a little bit like Chuck Berry or like just a classic rock and roll song. You say you want a
revolution. It's pretty good, honestly.
It's a really good song. It's one of their best songs. We all wanna change the world. But it's just a rock and roll song, right?
Yeah, okay.
So that is Revolution 9. Number 1.
I would be careful about playing Revolution 9 to any like young kids who are listening because... I'm pretty sure there's like a 50% chance it will summon demon.
It's not... There's nothing evil about Revolution 9.
It did. The first time I heard it, I actually couldn't get...
Did it freak you out a little bit?
I couldn't get a third of the way through because it actually terrified me.
Well, another thing is it's really, really long. It's like 8.5 minutes long, which is really long for... What? Really long. The length isn't the weirdest thing about it, but it is really long for a pop song. Most Beatles songs are like between 3 and 4 minutes long.
Yeah, like I think I searched up like worst Beatles songs of all time just because I was wondering like...
But Revolution 9 is 8.5 minutes long. It's very controversial.
Yeah,
as you might realize.
I searched up like worst Beatles songs of all time because I was like, well, that kind of sounds like an oxymoron. And this one was at the bottom. And described as like, oh, it's not even music. Like it's not even a song. But I was like, I don't know. Number
9. Here it is. Number 9.
Number 9. This isn't even the weird part.
Number 9. It's not the weirdest part. Number 9. Flipping ahead.
I'll
skip ahead a little bit more.
Why? Okay, all right, so, that's the end of our podcast. Bye. I'm going
to
go...
Revolution 9, though, like, to be honest, it's not really a pop song. It's almost more like a piece of modern art, like something you would see in a modern art museum or hear or experience in a modern art museum.
I don't know about that.
It is. So there's a lot of found sounds and a lot of the way it's constructed. So I think you can make an argument for it from an artistic point of view.
Yeah.
But it's not what people think of as a Beatles song. So like other songs that are on the White Album include like Here Comes the Sun and While My Guitar Gently Weeps. So like these beautiful kind of pop songs or even like Revolution or Blackbird or like these nice catchy little pop songs. And Revolution 9 is absolutely not that.
Yeah, I did... I saw like a little interview with like John Lennon like years later that said like, oh, Revolution 9's a weird one, right? And apparently the voice of number 9 is like someone testing out like the audio system. And apparently he like took a whole bunch of like audio tapes and just like played them in reverse and back and just recorded that and was like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Let's publish that.
Well, I think Yoko Ono, who was John Lennon was married to at the time, who was kind of an experimental Japanese artist. I think she had a big part in creating that song, too.
I think someday they're going to release, like, a just, like, an EP of, like, Revolution 2 through 8.
Yeah.
And we'll just, like, listen to it, like, start off amazing and just slowly descend into madness.
Yeah. I'm not sure why one became Revolution 1 and one became Revolution 9, other than that voice that repeats number 9 all the way through it.
It's haunting. Like, yeah. Literally, after listening to that, just walking around the school hallways, I kind of felt, like, a bit unsafe.
It's pretty strange. Most people don't like it at all. I mean, it's definitely the
most people.
It's the track that people skip when they're listening to the White Album. But some people, every now and then, you'll come across someone who will like strongly defend that song as an artistic creation.
I saw a review of it that said that like back then people were either like completely confused and like completely baffled by it, or they were like super fans were like scrambling to find meaning in it.
I think I told you, we might have even talked about it on the podcast. I saw the movie Yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And the movie Yesterday, the premise is like this guy who's like a singer-songwriter gets into a bike accident. And like when he's like at the same time he's in a bike accident, there's this blackout all around the world. And when he wakes up from his bike accident, like the rest of the world has never heard of the Beatles, but he still remembers all the Beatles songs. And he's like, I could just say that I wrote it and then I could be super popular and I could get all these songs out there.
Did they mention Revolution 9?
Well, that's the thing. So there's this scene, there are a couple scenes where he's in his bedroom and he's writing like the names of Beatles songs and putting them on sticky notes and putting them on his bedroom wall. And he's trying to remember like all the lyrics to like Eleanor Rigby and other songs. And he's like writing them down. And so there's like on his wall, there's a bunch of sticky notes with different Beatles songs on it. The part that I found either as a funny like Easter egg joke or as the most ridiculous thing in the whole movie, despite all the rest of the premise,
like just
is
a sticky note
there is a sticky note that says Revolution 9. And I was like,
does it just say,
oh,
like,
come on.
Does it just say like number 9 on it?
He never addresses it. It's just there is a sticky note on his wall that says Revolution number 9.
Well, I mean, they kind of have to include that to be fair. But
there's no way he's going to like record Revolution number 9. Because it doesn't even have lyrics. You know?
Literally, I tried searching up the lyrics and it just said like number 9, number 9, number 9, and then dot, dot, dot. Yeah. Like it was like official like genius lyrics.
It was actually a pretty good movie. And it was a movie that really makes you appreciate like how good the Beatles music was and how much good music they made. But I thought that part was really funny.
Overall?
I still think about that sometimes. Like, why would you even bother to write down Revolution 9 and stick it on your wall?
Overall, Revolution 9, pretty high recommendation.
Yeah. Yep. Let's do some news.
Now your tomorrow morning's headlines tonight.
I have a really interesting news from the world of science. Science! A new study came out where a research team is proposing a major philosophical shift in the way we think about space travel. A group of researchers headed by a microbiologist named Jose Lopez, a professor at Nova Southeastern University in Florida, along with his colleagues W. Raquel Peixoto and Alexandra Rosado from the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro, said that their major revision is that they believe we should send microbes to the planet Mars.
These science stories are like my favorite.
So this is very, very highly controversial because most scientists believe that when we have like space travel, we need to maintain the pristine environments of every place we visit. So we talked about that somewhat on the podcast a while ago, that an Israeli lunar probe crash landed on the moon and now there are tardigrades on the moon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, littered on the moon.
Can you imagine?
The reason that was so controversial is because there's this protocol.
Imagine if, like, billions of years later, the tardigrades would have evolved into, like, complex beings on the planet and then colonized it.
Yeah. And then they return to Earth and take over the world.
Yeah, probably.
We talked about that possibility. So the reason why this is so controversial is the standard philosophy, the consensus among scientists, is something called planetary protection, or PP, and it dates to the 1950s, and it was established by the Committee on Space Research, or COSPAR. And the idea behind planetary protection is that we need to protect space from our microbes because those microbes could contaminate other environments. There's a couple of different rationales for it. Part of it is that if you want to go do research on another planet, say you make it to Mars and you want to research the Martian environment, If it's contaminated by our microbes, you might not know what's native to Mars. So if you find microbes on Mars, you won't know, did that come from Mars or did it come from Earth? And part of it is that, you know, if we bring our microbes to another environment, it might contaminate it and it might wipe out whole ecosystems, right? Like the whole idea of an invasive species. So it could destroy whatever environment is there.
Well, the thing is, like, I guess I could kind of see Mars, but there's a point where, like, you reach plants that are so unfamiliar that, like, pretty much interacting with it in any way could, like, cause something to happen, I feel like.
That's kind of a theme of a lot of science fiction, like Star Trek talks about that, right? Mm. But these researchers took a different approach, though. They said that, they start out by saying contamination is inevitable. It's going to happen. So even if we try our best to keep, like, all of our probes clean, eventually it's going to happen. And we already saw that on the moon, right? So in a way, he's right. So we had this crash landing on the moon, and now we've got tardigrades on the moon. And then he also says, we need to think about it not just in terms of research, but in terms of colonization. So if we're going to colonate Mars, we're going to have to bring microbes with us. And what he says is we should be proactively sending microbes there in order to terraform Mars. Have you heard of terraforming?
It's where you like plant plants on it, right?
Well, not necessarily plants, but you make it more habitable for people. So somehow you make it sort more like Earth, and you create an environment. And he says, from what we know about like the way the Earth was created and the way the Earth evolved, like microbes were super important in that process. So the microbes have to be there to begin the process of evolution. And he says, if we're serious about colonization, we should send microbes ahead of time so that they can start to colonize the planet before we get there. Because if we're going to live on Mars, we're going to have microbes there. Now, some of the scientists who disagree with this guy, with Lopez, say that's ridiculous. First of all, colonization of Mars is probably like not going to happen because it's too harsh of an environment. And it's just not worth departing from this scientific consensus that says you should protect the planet and not contaminate it. And also other people have said, well, just because it might be difficult not to contaminate doesn't mean we shouldn't try. And we shouldn't just assume that we're not going to be able to do it. And for the most part, we've been able to maintain that for, you know, the 80 years we've had this protocol, the 80 years or so that we've done space travel, we've been able to not contaminate outer space. So I just thought that was really interesting that they're talking about like sending microbes to Mars to terraform it.
I think pretty much like since Stephen Hawking and Albert Einstein and Bill Nye and like pretty much every like well-respected scientist out there has said that like Earth might not be habitable in like just a century, I think we definitely should continue like research and work into Martian colonization.
I think it's something we should look at. I sort of also am skeptical whether it'll actually happen, but I think it's something that we should, I think science should try to do whatever science can do.
Yeah, I think we absolutely.
Other than, you know, create killer robots that'll destroy us all.
Okay. But what if we put the microbes on there and like to avoid contamination, what if we spawned a black hole and another black hole and combined them?
And an anti-black hole, white hole. Yeah, that would be great. You want to share your story?
Okay. I just love how that's like scientist solution to everything.
Yes.
Like real life. Okay. United flight diverted to free passenger trapped in bathroom. I like this one because I can imagine like the pilot of the airplane just like getting off and saying like, hey, you're out of the bathroom. And he's like, shouldn't you be flying the plane? And he's like, no, this is more important.
I think, well, there's a lot of things I want to talk about this, but tell us the story first.
Okay. A United Airlines flight was diverted to Denver, Colorado on Wednesday night to free a passenger stuck in the bathroom. The lavatory door became inoperative during flight 1554 from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco. A female passenger was trapped inside.
So you're flying all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast. At some point, you reach cruising altitude, and you're like, I really got to use the bathroom. You go into the bathroom, use the bathroom, and then you try to get out of the bathroom, and guess what? the door doesn't work anymore.
This is how you get a phobia of airplanes and claustrophobia in one experience.
And usually airplane bathrooms are pretty small.
Yeah.
And the idea that, like, because, you know, they always say, like, for takeoff and landing, you need to be in your seat, buckled in. Guess what there's not in an airport, in an airplane bathroom?
In bathrooms. Yeah, there's no seat belt.
There's no seat belt.
There's a lot of phobias going on here, I feel like.
Yeah. You know what I saw for the first time when I was flying from Qatar to the United States?
What?
A bathroom that had a window. Like, it was an airplane bathroom that had a window over the seat toilet. I'd never seen that before.
That flight sounded so awesome, by the way.
You could actually look out the window from the bathroom, which I don't know why that struck me as odd, but I've never seen that before in a bathroom.
Like, I remember
in an airplane.
This is a bit of a tangent, but I remember me and Henry saw Inception. Like, Ken Watanabe and Leonardo DiCaprio, I can't remember any of the names of the characters, mm-hmm. were, like, eating this, like, really fancy dinner with, like, these wine glasses and stuff on an airplane. And I was just thinking, like, how did you get that food on an airplane?
They have pretty good food on the plane that I was traveling in, too.
That's crazy. But anyways, so it says the passenger is safely removed from the lavatory after landing, and customers have since continued on their destination to on a new aircraft. That's... I mean, I hope the new aircraft is, like, better, or at least just as good.
So they're flying from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco, and they have to stop in Denver because they can't get this person out of the bathroom. I wonder how panicky they were.
Yeah, that would be scary.
It would be kind of scary to be in a plane that's, like, landing, and you're in the bathroom, and I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not that scary, but...
But can you imagine if, like, you're on a really nice American Airlines flight where, like, they gave you, like, cookies and, like, soda, and, like, they had, like, every single movie available to watch... And then, like, just because one person had to use the bathroom, you had to switch to, like, the crappiest airline ever.
Yeah, imagine the all the other passengers, too, that, like, they're expecting to land in San Francisco, and they land in Denver. And then they're like, why are we landing in Denver? Oh, someone got stuck in the bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, people, like, when you go back to San Francisco, California, or to San Francisco, California, and people are going to be like, where were you? Like, what was the holdup? And you're like, some person got stuck in the bathroom.
How would you like to be the person that got stuck in the bathroom? Wouldn't you be kind of embarrassed? Like, you finally get out and everyone's clapping for you.
Yeah.
Way to go. Everyone's all...
It's not even their fault. Like, I feel so bad for this lady on, like, multiple levels. I feel like a lot of people would be too emotionally traumatized by a lot of this to, like, clap or anything, but...
Yeah, I don't think the news article gives the name of the person, fortunately. Maybe. But that would be a story to tell. I got stuck in a bathroom for like hours and they had to land in Denver instead of San Francisco.
Imagine that happened in that Twilight Zone episode where that guy is like, hey, holy crap, there's a gremlin that's attacking the plane and we're going to crash. And they're like, yeah, hold on. We're trying to get this lady out of a bathroom.
Yep. Yeah. What if you had like turbulence, like really bad turbulence while you're in the bathroom? That would be terrible. You're bouncing around the bathroom.
Or what if there's a gremlin that's destroying the plane while you're in the bathroom?
That would also be a problem. I got one more story. This story really struck a nerve with me for reasons that will be obvious to you. Silent protest against Bangladesh's loud horn sparks noisy support. Bangladeshi Monomer Rahman Royal is stopping traffic, literally. The 36-year-old is on a one-man crusade to reduce unnecessary honking in one of the world's noisiest cities, where a cacophony of vehicle horns and heavy traffic is as loud as a rock concert.
You know, I've considered before, like, what if we protest against certain groups of protesting? I'm sure that happens, like, all the time, but this is, like, the perfect example.
Well, this guy apparently has a lot of support. He stands on a weekend, he'll stand near a busy intersection near his home, and with a yellow placard with the Bengali rhyme, Horn Hudai Banja Budai, which means only an idiot honks a horn unnecessarily.
Dang.
So I just got back from my trip. One of the places I stopped was Bangladesh. And Bangladesh is a really interesting place. It was definitely the worst traffic that I have ever seen in my life. Fun fact about Bangladesh. Bangladesh is the 92nd largest country area-wise, which means it's a pretty small country, but is the 8th most populous. So it is crazy. Very densely populated, and a lot of the country is covered by, it has like rivers and mangroves and Bengal tigers. So some of the country is like not really livable. So the places that are livable are extremely densely populated, and you have just, it's tons of cars like all night long.
It's crazy.
I remember looking out the hotel window at the highway, like in the middle of the night, and it was packed, like jam packed, like all day, every day. There's traffic, so much traffic, and this was true in India too, but especially in Bangladesh, like people honk their horns constantly. So if you're on the road and you want to change lanes, you just honk and you go. Like, it doesn't matter if there's someone there. You just honk and then you go behind them or to the side. It's like people are running themselves off the road. And there are these big buses. And I noticed all over in Bangladesh, there were all these buses. And the buses looked like they had just been smashed into, like sideswiped. And a lot of people would have on their cars, they would have like... Like, it would look like a normal car like that you and I would see around our hometown. But in addition to the bumper that was on the car, they would have like a metal bumper that they attached to that bumper. So it was almost like a bumper car because the traffic is so bad and people just run into each other so much.
That's been so scary.
It was by far the worst traffic. Do you remember what the traffic was like when we went to Mexico City? Like how scary the traffic was. I don't know if you noticed.
I remember it not being too crowded. I remember like no one would ever stop for you if you crossed the road.
Mexico City traffic is pretty scary. India traffic was worse. Bangladesh traffic was by far the worst traffic I've seen. So I can kind of understand why this guy and everyone that drove me around in Bangladesh and in India would honk their horn all the time. Like anytime they wanted to move lanes, they would honk, honk, honk.
Okay, but if he's causing more traffic in the most trafficy place in the country...
He's not really causing more traffic. He's just standing like in the median with a sign.
Okay. He just has a sign?
It's just a sign that says, basically, only an idiot honks their horn unnecessarily.
That's okay.
He says, this is my silent protest against the nuisance. I just try to deliver the message to people. Since starting his campaign 4 years ago, the graphic designer said he has received overwhelming support. People on their way home stopped to stand by my side, silently holding up my placards on the road, even though they don't know me. This is a sign of positive change.
I feel like we should be hearing this stuff from like an outsider and not from himself.
Yeah. He says photos of his silent protest have been shared thousands of times on social media, attracting many supportive comments. According to the World Health Organization, the maximum noise level that can be tolerated by humans for 8 hours without some loss of hearing is 85 decibels. Dhaka, which is the capital of Bangladesh, that's where I was, frequently has noise levels of 110 decibels. During peak hours. The sound of honking contributes to that. And it says in this article that people will often have police and ambulance horns just as, in their regular cars. They'll just have like sirens in their cars or really loud horns. The government actually passed anti-honking laws where you can face up to 6 months imprisonment, but they don't really enforce these laws. Royal, who sometimes campaigns after work also, is worried that his hearing will suffer due to the amount of time he spends standing at intersections. But the young father says he will keep going until noise pollution reduces, adding that he was taking a hit for a greater cause. I strongly believe this abnormal behavior of honking will change one day and we will be able to live a better life and leave a better Dhaka for our future generations.
There's a Doctor Who episode called Gridlock about, like, it's a lot better than it sounds, but it's about, like, these people who just get, like, infinitely stuck in traffic.
Yeah, like, for thousands of years.
Yeah.
That's what traffic in Bangladesh is like. It's not quite that bad, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah, there's rumors that Russell T. Davies wrote that episode just, like, right after he had terrible traffic, and he was just ranting about it.
Yeah. That's our news. Let's do a segment. I was thinking we could do an Alexa game. We could play a game with Alexa.
Shall we play a game?
Oh, love to. How about global thermonuclear war?
Sorry, I don't know that.
Drop is my favorite. It's just so cheesy.
Alexa, let's play the fake news game.
You are about to play the fake news game. All of the stories you'll hear have been reported as true,
but
it's up to
one.
You to say if they're fake or if they're news. So, how many people want to play this time?
Two.
Two it is. I'll tell you five stories each, and then we'll see who's got the best nose for news. Player one, ready.
All right.
Steady. Go.
Oh, okay.
In March 2017, an article claimed that a woman was arrested for training squirrels to attack her ex-boyfriend. But is it fake or is it news?
News. That's too weird to be fake.
Don't worry. Some of these are hard. World News Daily, which claimed 43-year-old Janice Smith captured and trained numerous squirrels, carries a disclaimer that its stories are satire and all characters in them are entirely fictional.
It's like The Onion.
Don't worry, though. Yep. About 55% of players get it wrong, too. Player 2. In July 2015, several media outlets reported that the winner of the French Scrabble Championship didn't speak a word of French. But is it fake or is it news?
News.
Correct. Nigel Richards from New Zealand won the tournament after memorizing the entire French dictionary in just 9
weeks.
That's
crazy.
I love New Zealand.
Mr. Richards is widely regarded as the greatest Scrabble player of all time. Player 1. In October 2017, a website claimed that a young girl disconnected her grandfather's life support machine to charge her phone. Is it fake or is it news?
Fake. I hope.
Spot on.
Hey.
Dozens of versions of the story were published on websites such as BuzzFlair and Elite Readers.
That sounds
the
like it was made up
entirely
by Gen
fictional
X's complaining
and originated
about millennials.
On a satire website. The story may be loosely based on an old urban legend of a murderous janitor unplugging life support machines to power his floor polisher. Player 2. In 2014, a newspaper reported that a man dressed as a Teletubby broke into his friend's house and stole Chinese food. But is it fake or is it news?
News.
Correct. Pennsylvania police arrested the 20-year-old man who was dressed in a yellow Lala Teletubby costume.
Florida man story, though.
He reportedly broken into the house following a Halloween party, raided the fridge, and put Chinese food in his front pouch.
What?
Player 1. In November 2017, a Fox News commentator attacked the Canadian Tolerance Police for forcing elementary school teachers to attend an LGBTTTIQQAAPP training session. But
okay,
is it fake or is it news?
Fake. Sounds like a satire article.
Better luck next time.
Was that actually the
correct that the 15-letter acronym on the poster was real, but failed to notice that it was an ironic joke designed to appeal to teachers who didn't know the right language to use when discussing sexuality and gender issues.
Hmm.
Player 2.
It's got a bit too
political. In April 2017, several websites reported that Malia Obama was expelled from Harvard for a drug violation. But is it fake or is it news?
Fake.
Yeah, that's fake.
Exactly. The last line of defense, which labels itself as a satirical website, made the claim despite the fact that she hadn't even started her course at the time of writing. Player 1. In 2016, several media outlets reported the billionaire founder of the Corona Beer Brewery made everyone in the village where he grew up a millionaire in his will. But is it fake or is it news?
Fake. I think.
Spot on.
Yes.
The Daily Mail, The Sun, The Telegraph and many other outlets reported that Antonino Fernandez had left 200 million euros to the 80 residents of the Spanish village where he was born and raised, citing a report in a local paper as the source. However, the story turned out to be untrue. Player 2. In 2012, a newspaper claimed that women only become good cooks at the age of 55, but is it fake or is it news?
News.
Impressive. The research published in the Daily Mail and the Telegraph were taken from a study of 1,000 women by a supermarket chain.
Oh.
The article also claims that this is the age when women can perfectly boil an egg. Player 1.
That's fun.
In October 2017,
a website
reported that a man strapped himself to 100 helium balloons and flew 800 feet in air.
Hey.
But is it fake or is it news?
News. We've talked about that one on the podcast.
Spot on. Tom Morgan flew 15 miles across South Africa in a lawn chair in an adventure he had been planning for months.
Okay.
Mr. Morgan is now planning on establishing the first competitive balloon race in Africa. Player 2. In May 2017, a website reported that an Ohio school teacher lost an eye in a fidget spinner accident. But is it fake or is it news?
Fake.
Fake. That was my turn.
Thoughtless. A website called Focus Times ran the story,
and it wasn't saying
citing
it
reports by local media and district officials, but no such incident took place.
The
website also published a similar story involving a man being hospitalized after the toy was lodged in a private area.
Ooh.
Break time.
That's
scores. Player 1, you got 3 out of 5 right. Player 2, you got 5 out of 5
Ooh,
right.
I did really well.
Which means player 2
wins
this round.
I did slightly above average.
Well done, player 2. Want to play again?
No.
Thanks for playing the fake news game.
Alexa doesn't know.
All right, that was kind of fun. There were some crazy stories there.
Yeah.
There's only one last thing to do on the podcast, and that is...
3 words for you. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself. Treat yourself.
So Mom and Henry have joined us for Treat Yourself. For Treat Yourself today, we have some State Fair-inspired flavors of flavored milk from Borden. I really liked it when I saw this in the grocery store because we used to go to the Texas State Fair every year. We haven't gone every year for the last few years, but we've gone some years. But one of the things we always used to do at the Texas State Fair was there's the dairy building. And they always had Elsie the cow, who's the mascot for Borden Foods. And Elsie the cow is on these little bottles.
Their strawberry milk is so good.
And this is State Fair inspired. So we have 3 flavors that are supposedly inspired by the State Fair. And it made me think the State Fair is right around the corner. In fact, Big Tex is now standing on the fairgrounds. Borden State Fair inspired flavors of milk. We have banana taffy whole milk that is like yellow, as you might guess. There is blueberry cobbler whole milk that is purple. And there is cotton candy whole milk that is kind of a bright blue. Which one should we try first?
Oh, by the way.
I think we should try banana taffy first.
I'm joining. Well,
I already said that.
Well, yeah, but my mic's not on.
Oh, I should turn your mic on. All right, should we try the banana taffy first?
Sure.
I like banana-flavored things.
I was thinking the cotton candy first because it probably has the mildest flavor.
I was thinking it would have the strongest flavor.
Yeah, I think it would have the strongest flavor.
All right, got some glasses here. I'll pour a little bit, pass it around. What do we think of the banana taffy-flavored milk?
That is so good.
It's really good.
Oh, my gosh.
Yum, 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 yum. Delicioso.
It almost tastes like eggnog.
Almost, yeah, but without the eggnoggy taste.
Yeah, it's not as thick.
It wasn't as strongly flavored as
I expected it to be. Tastes like eggnog without the eggnog taste.
Well,
without the egg.
Well, there's no nutmeg, for one thing.
Yeah.
It's faintly banana. It's not overpoweringly banana-y.
It's not really that strong. It's pretty good.
It actually tastes pretty similar to the strawberry milk. Which is also awesome.
It tastes a lot like Laffy Taffy's, honestly. Like,
yeah.
Although, yeah, kind of. I get it delicious. But one thing I don't get is how do Laffy Taffy's have to do with the State Fair?
Because we always get taffy at the State Fair. Have you not noticed that?
Oh, it's just taffy? I thought it was
Laffy Taffy's. Banana taffy.
Okay. Banana taffy.
Okay.
It's good. I like that it's not... Like, I was expecting it to be very thick and very, very sweet. And it's sweet, but it's not, like... It's not too much.
See, on the label, it's got bananas and it's got a little taffy.
Honestly, it's kind of grown on me over time. But overall, I don't think I quite enjoy taffy as much as everyone else does. But
taffy is kind of a tradition of ours, though. When we go to the State Fair, we usually come home with a box of taffy.
Yeah, that's a cool experience. But like, I really like this, though. This is amazing so far.
Next, we're going to try blueberry cobbler flavored milk.
I feel like this is also going to be like really good, maybe even better.
What do we think of the blueberry cobbler flavor?
It's basically just like the taffy itself, but in liquid form.
Well, this one's not taffy it's flavored. Cobbler. It's just blueberry cobbler flavored.
Well, it definitely tastes like some flavor of taffy.
Okay.
It's really good.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of blueberry shredded wheats.
Yeah.
It reminds me vaguely of like those, some of those like Halloween cereals, like the ones that are berry flavored.
that was sort of a weird experience for me because, like, I still think it's good, but, like, I tasted it and I was like, oh, it tastes like blueberry taffy. And then for some reason, like, for a short period of time, there's, like, an aftertaste of the cobbler part.
Yeah, you can actually taste the cobbler. That's what's weird. It's not just blueberry flavor.
It's weird that you can actually taste that in something that you drink.
It tastes exactly like the milk left over from when you have, like, blueberry-flavored shredded wheat.
That's what I think it tastes like, too. So it's almost like a cereal milk.
Okay.
So, does everybody think it's delicious?
Yes.
But
yum, 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 not as good
as the banana. Delicioso!
Maybe not quite as good.
I think it's better.
I think I let it get better than the banana.
I can't tell if it's better or not quite as good. I mean, it's all great, but...
I think it's better.
I have a question for everybody here. Does it smell more blueberry-y than it tastes to you? Because that was my, like, when you go to drink it, you can smell it, you're like, ooh, very blueberry-y.
It smells a lot more than the banana did, for sure.
It does taste more fake blueberry than, like, actual blueberry.
I don't taste the blueberry as much as I smell it.
It has that same blueberry flavor that, like, blueberry-flavored cereals have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And blueberry mini wheats are...
It definitely has a cereal-like flavor to it.
All right, it does.
Let's see. I think this one will be the most controversial, is the cotton candy.
Yeah, I don't know why.
The one that's bright blue, which kind of reminds me of The Last Jedi.
Oh, the...
the blue milk.
Yeah.
My predictions... my predictions is Mom is going to gag and say that it's too sweet. Dad is just going to find it okay, but it's still a bit too sweet. I'm going to find it pretty good, and Henry's going to love it.
We'll see.
Okay, I think everyone will like it.
Let's try it.
Let's try it, and then we don't have to speculate.
I don't know why, but for some reason, I feel like it's going to be really good, even though there's no reason why it would be good.
Well, the other two flavors are great, so.
True.
All right, without any further ado. What do you guys think?
That tastes exactly like the birthday cake flavor of ice cream from Brahms.
I think it tastes like cotton candy. I think it tastes lot like cotton
candy. Yeah, it does. Like
it
actual
tastes
cotton
exactly
candy.
Like,
not like the flavoring.
Like you know how like sometimes when you like put in your mouth a little dissolvent, it tastes slightly different? It has that too.
But like there's a while where I get that birthday cake flavored ice cream from Brahms every single time, and this just tastes like the melted version of it. And
to me, it doesn't taste like birthday cake flavor. It tastes like cotton candy flavor.
I think both. I think it does, but I think it also tastes like cotton candy. It's very... the birthday cake flavor has kind of that fake vanilla taste, which I like. Like, I'm not knocking the fake vanilla flavor.
Do you think?
It tastes like that, but with a little bit, like a little bit more toasty, like toasted sugar.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I think, I don't know how, but I can kind of taste the fluffiness.
Okay. Would it be an unpopular opinion to say this one's the best one?
All right, let's rank them. Let's go around the circle and rank them. William, you start first.
Ooh, okay. That's going to be hard. Maybe...
There's only three of them. It can't be that difficult.
I guess the lowest...
Also, nothing hinges on you ranking them correctly.
I guess the lowest, which is still awesome, is the banana taffy. And then the blueberry and then the cotton candy.
I agree.
I really like the cotton candy.
Okay, my rankings are blueberry cobbler first, banana taffy second, and cotton candy third. I liked it. I thought everybody, I think, thinks they're all delicious, right?
Yum, 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 yum.
But
delicioso.
The cotton candy was my least favorite. It's a little weird. It definitely tastes like cotton candy, so I give them credit there, but it's not the one that I like the most. I like the blueberry cobbler the most.
It's hard because they're all so good.
They're all really good. Mom, what do you think?
So I think they're all good. I definitely like the banana best out of all three, and like it's not even close. And then a ways down would be blueberry, and a little ways down from that would be the cotton candy. They're all good, but the banana is just so much better.
So you like the banana, then the blueberry, then the cotton candy?
Yeah, all right, the cotton candy was good at first, but I can't imagine drinking a whole.
I can imagine drinking all three of these.
What do you think, Henry?
I think that the blue's the best. The cotton candy.
The cotton candy is the best?
I agree with Will's ranking.
And then what's the
although,
rest?
And then blueberry and then banana?
Yeah, although blueberry might be... Actually, no. I'm going to say that blueberry is better than cotton candy.
So you go blueberry, cotton candy, and banana. So
all four of us have
different rankings then.
So from highest to lowest, it would be blueberry, cotton candy, and then banana.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So all four of us had different rankings.
Yep.
Yeah,
so
I
they're
honestly,
all pretty good, and we all have different ideas about which is the best.
Honestly, it's kind of frustrating that we have to share this between all four of us, because, like, Ah, that's so good.
These are limited edition. They'll only be in stores for a little while.
Because they're evil.
They're pretty good. Whoever came up with these did a pretty good job, I gotta say. And Borden milk tends to be pretty good, too.
I feel like with the cotton candy one, they could have made it just, like, just really sweet and way too sugary. But, like, they still managed to, like, make it more than that.
Yeah, I wonder, do these all have the same amount of calories? It looks like they all have 220 calories.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably just, like...
in a pint of milk. I mean, which I think is typically what you have, like, in a chocolate milk.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're just, like,
yeah, there's
sugar water. Or if it's just, like, liquid sugar, but...
There's two servings per container.
Yeah.
So...
yeah,
that drinking the whole thing would be 440 calories. Don't do that, probably.
But 110 calories...
I would do it.
It's still pretty sugary, but it's not too bad.
It's 220 calories.
I know, but if you drink just one serving, if you drink 110...
No, it's 220 calories per serving.
Oh, so half of this is 220.
Yes.
So if you drink the whole thing, it's 440.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying don't do that.
Yeah.
Man, I thought...
unless you really need the calories.
I seriously thought that nothing could beat their strawberry milk, but like, holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended.
Pretty good. So that is Treat Yourself, and that is our podcast. Thanks for being on the podcast, Mom and Henry, for joining us. Thanks, William, for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who listened. If you did listen, let us know. You can tweet us at TTD Podcast on Twitter. You can email us at talktodadpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at Talk to Dad Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you like the podcasts, we've got two requests. One, tell a friend so that other people can find the podcast that way. And two, if you leave us a 5-star review where you found the podcast, that will help us out as well. If you subscribe, rate, and review us, that helps lift the profile of the podcast and other people might find it. This has been a lot of fun, and we will see you later. There's time for later, alligator.